Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think the need to go back within myself to look in and to care also for my body, mind, spirit has been quintessential to survive also as a mother, but also to get better at mothering my children. And I was definitely challenged by the expectations of what I needed to be and as a mother and what I felt like wanted to express. And the works on escapism were a way to remind myself that you can still escape or get that space, that personal space, that kind of time for yourself within the crowd, within the chaos. It's about putting aside the pressures, I guess, and also and holding on to the foundations of who you want to be and how you want to be.
I'm delighted to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by an artist, mother, and tax expert, Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. Is your creative practice gaining steam? Maybe you just got a big grant or a big show. You're excited to get to work, but a nagging feeling tells you that there are some tax issues that could hurt you. What you don't know might actually be holding you back from all that you can accomplish. You just want to get down to the studio and do the work you love, but finances and tax concerns are dragging you down. Thankfully, Sunlight Tax is here for you. Artist and tax pro Hannah Cole started Sunlight Tax to empower creative people with the tax and money tools you need so you can have more money, more time, and make a bigger impact with your work. Who doesn't want that? Sunlight Tax offers an annual membership called Money Bootcamp, which is tailored to your busy creative life to teach you targeted skills for your financial health and taxes. Hannah guides you through the pitfalls into simple systems so you can stay on track, start investing in yourself, and get back to the studio without getting bogged down. Right now, listeners of the Artist Mother Podcast can get a free artist tax deduction guide by going to sunlighttax.com/artistmother. That's sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Thank you, Hannah, for providing so much to artists and helping us through with all of our financial concerns. So reassuring to have experts like you we can trust and we know are looking out for us. Head to sunlighttax.com to find out more about everything Hannah has to offer, and don't forget your free artist tax deduction guide just for our community at sunlighttax.com/artistmother. I am so delighted to welcome artist mother Claudia Ferrez to the podcast today. Claudia is a French-Canadian of Vietnamese and Egyptian descent based in Melbourne. She is an artist, a mother to two children, and a nurse. Her art practice includes photography, sculpture, installation, performance, and video, and is framed around autobiographical events that have challenged her sense of control. Becoming a mother is one such of these events. While using socially engaged work, relational aesthetics, and care economies, she seeks to find strategies to expand her roles and responsibilities required in both her art and mothering practices. Claudia is definitely talking our language. She is the current Women's Art Register in the Artists in Residence program, and I'm just delighted to welcome her to the podcast today. Claudia has a piece in our exhibition that's currently up on our website called You Are Not Wonderful Just Because You Are a Mother. And Claudia, I just am so grateful that you're taking time to tell us more about your art and your life. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thanks, Kaylin.
Yes, delighted to have you. Okay, so to start, I just want to have you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today. Maybe, you know, just thinking back, like, did you always want to be an artist? Were you always interested in the arts? Or is there like a specific moment that you feel like really ties you to your identity as an artist right now?
I guess as a child, I was very creative, making little drawings, little sculptures. And as I grew into wanting to expand that creative side, I started to want to make my own clothes and to modify clothing. And it wasn't until much later, like I would say early 20s, that I had full freedom to try to explore further that creative side. By then I was also doing a lot of photography and carrying my camera around and being known amongst my siblings as the creative one. And from then on, I think it remained always in the background, the creative side, like the need to kind of just, if I wanted to make something, I thought, well, I can do this. There's nothing that's going to stop me. There's no self-consciousness in wearing things that I would create. Like I was just really proud and feeling comfortable doing that. And it probably helped with the community of friends and people I used to work with that were all kind of fostering this kind of self-expression through clothing or any garments, and it really helped me boost my confidence back then.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about, just how, like, you know, as a young person, you're trying to figure out your place in the world, and the image you project is like a part of that, and how being creative and you know, taking some liberties with that can really influence like your confidence and even you, like this idea of being an artist. I think that's interesting to think about. So you're French Canadian, but you live in Australia now. Did you grow up in Australia or were you from Canada? Tell me a little bit about like where you've lived.
I grew up in Canada for up to my late 20s, and then when I went back to university to do a nursing degree in my late 20s, I decided to go, and once I graduated, to travel in Australia and work as a nurse. And what happened was I arrived here and I had an open ticket for a year and traveled and worked and took lots of pictures and all that, and I ended up meeting an Australian man, and I ended up staying. And I ended up in Melbourne.
love kept you.
Yes. So it's quite good. And Melbourne was my favorite city when I was traveling around. And I thought I had to stay, it would be the place to be. Yeah.
Where in Canada were you from?
I was born and raised in Montreal.
Okay.
And spent probably the first maybe 20 years there and in Montreal. But then I moved and lived in different places in Ontario and Newfoundland and all that.
Okay. I'm originally from Western New York, like about an hour from Niagara Falls. So, you know, I know that area pretty well. I actually have never been to Montreal, but I've been to Toronto many times, and, you know, just kind of that eastern edge of Canada I'm pretty familiar with. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, your work. Maybe you could describe it visually, which I know your work is pretty varied, but just maybe just give me like a little bit of an introduction for somebody who's never seen your work before. Talk a little bit about the mediums that you use and materials, and just share a bit about your process.
Sure. Depending on the project I intend to build, like the material changes. Like I went through a phase, I would say before I had the children, and just at the cusp of being a mother for a second time, where I wanted to explore escapism and voluntary escapism. So I decided to build structure in which I would perform self-isolation, which is kind of ironic given what's been happening in the last year. Yeah. And at that time, it was about isolating myself, but in a public kind of setting, in order to raise awareness regarding my invisibility as a mother. And I would perform with these self-contained kind of, one of them was a little house that I've reused in recent projects, and it just fits me, and I can sit in there, read, do my things, or even tilt the house onto the structure onto its side and lie there. It was, this structure was served as a multi-purpose kind of sculpture. And I liked the versatility of the piece. And then the following piece was similar, but then it was completely, it looked like, actually looked like a bit of like a coffin, but it had, the top was like with different colored acrylic pieces. And that was a kind of a piece to kind of, a structure in which I could rejuvenate, find my space again, some private space, but while being experiencing the light of the colorful light that would come through, as if it was kind of a structure where you want to kind of experience color therapy at the same time. And it was also a piece that could be moved around. And whenever I felt the moment was right, I would just get in and lie down and read or just have some space for myself.
So you were making this work before motherhood?
Before COVID. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah. So this work about escapism and self-isolation, this was like early motherhood you were making this work?
For sure, yes.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Yes. Early stages, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm, you know, imagining like just this, you know, transition that you go through when you have young kids and how suddenly this, you know, yourself as an individual is no longer reality, right? And so this like journey of like moving back inward, which so often women and mothers have such a hard time doing because we're, you know, chastised to like pay attention to ourselves and nurture ourselves and have time for ourselves. Like we're told in society that we need to be all about everyone else, you know, and our kids demand so much of that. I can definitely relate to this idea of making art around that.
Yes, and I think it's a strategy definitely to kind of raise awareness on the needs of the mother, regardless of whether there are others to think of when you're a mother. And I had been at that point strongly inspired by Absalon, who was an Israeli-French artist who created a series of little structures like that, little habitations or little diverse habitable sculptures where he would perform in the periphery of the city to try to kind of raise awareness again of wanting to stand out as a marginal society instead of being like an outcast. It's like being an outcast to try to raise awareness about being an outcast.
Yeah, you know,
it was so clever, and that was in the 60s, 70s. It was really good.
And so a lot of your work is performance-based, but then I know you naturally use photography as well to sort of, like, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, how the photography is, like, paired with some of the performance or some of this, like, sculpture and installation. Is that, you know, sort of a result of wanting to capture this experience and share it with others, or is it more just like something that, you know, happens outside of that? Like, I'm thinking specifically when you have projects or bodies of work where you're combining these mediums. Could you talk a little bit about sort of the relationship between performance and photography and installation?
Yes, the photography that has been present in the last body of works were, it's like a bit of a comeback because I had shifted completely my practice for a while. There was, it is image based because the visual, the aesthetics is definitely considered, but the images haven't been present as much as in the last year or so. And I think it was going back to what I felt comfortable with. It's the familiar of working with lenses and capturing using a different perspective, the ideas that I'm trying to convey, because the performing is really incorporating the body, the self in the work, and it is repeated throughout the different representations of my ideas. Like in the sculptural work, then you would see the work itself, like the labor, and in the image it would be again, but then again the work, and it's probably more visually direct, I guess, the image that represents something probably literal, but with a layer of layers of meanings in it.
Right.
Yeah. And the video, I guess it was an opportunity to, because of constraints, I had done a video work on, while I was doing a residency in Toronto 2 years ago at Artscape on Toronto Island. And I had taken just the bare minimum from Australia to attend. And I brought my sandbags with the word mother that had stenciled on them. And I wanted to kind of really get out there in... on the island and just play with my sandbags. And it turned out that I created this body of work where I filmed myself incorporating the sandbags into the landscape and showing, I guess, exposing the mother out there trying to work with the floods. And it was a bit of an experiment, but ended up being quite... it expanded my horizons, and when it comes to trying different things, also because I try to challenge myself through it within my practice, like the building things, like learning how to weld, and all these things, like, are just ways to garner more skills to try to find different ways to express myself.
Right. Yeah, and it makes sense that you know, you're dealing with a subject. Or subject matter, like this identity that is so multidimensional. Like there's, you know, so many ways that you can sort of express this content. And I love that you're not limiting yourself to like one medium to explore it. It's really inspiring. Could you talk a little bit about that, you know, that piece, which is an image from that body of work, is what you have in the virtual show on our site right now, but that body of work is called Strategies, right?
Yes.
So I'm looking at the images of, you know, the installation on your website. Could you talk just a little bit about sort of those different components? It looks like I'm seeing a photograph. I'm seeing the actual sandbags in arranged in sort of a sculpture. It looks like there's a video that you can watch and listen to, and then there's some actual sculptures of hands. Could you talk a little bit more about those individual components?
Sure. So the wall or the barricade of sandbags, they were put together. There was about 200 of them. So I wanted to find something that could be playful as well as work as a like connect the viewer to the image of like, okay, protection, barrier. And I thought, well, those sandbags, I started with about half of that number, and it felt like it could totally be amplified to another level to really push the weight, the responsibilities, but also there's something, the stacking, the repetitiveness mm-hmm. of the responsibilities of what mothering entails could be also visually felt. And I stenciled every bag with different colors, but always the same word and the same stencil, which capital letters mother on each and one of them. And mm-hmm. the process was quite meditative because I had bought about 200, like lots and lots of, I think each bag was 20 kilos of sand, play sand. And I had, they were emptied in my garage. I had to like dry them because it was, the sand was wet. I had to wait till it was dried and then fill all the bags in hand stitch to close them. And I've been doing this like throughout the, between, the moment the kids would go to sleep, and then I would do a couple of bags at night like that. Mm-hmm. And it was, and or during when they would be watching a show, I'd be sitting next to them and doing that, and they helped me. And that was such a period, a great period where it would be like, okay, I had my mind on it, this is what I'm gonna do. And for my grad show, that was my final project for my master's, and I thought the hand and the labor in it is a bit is definitely conveyed mm-hmm. strongly there, and from that idea of reusing also the work which has been as you can see in the virtual show, this is what I decided to kind of extrapolate from that mm-hmm. exhibition and create the work that's on the virtual show. The hands were, I think it was all about capturing my strength, but also my weakness, because I'm right-handed. I'm really, like a lot of the work we do as mothers, of course, is manual. It's like there's a tangibility in the work, and I wanted to use the hand in that position, which is the position of like pushing against, mm-hmm. was a way to also explore the idea of the structure holding, but also pushing against the boundaries that are put there, like the expectations, as well as pushing against to hold, to maintain, to keep it together, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I love that. I think that comes clear too through just the positioning of those hand sculptures, because they almost appear to be like holding up the ceiling of the exhibition space, or, you know, the different walls, or like keeping the floor sort of in its place. They definitely have this play between like providing support and also like a boundary, which I think is really lovely. I love thinking too about how, you know, sandbags, like in crisis, you know, in like a flood situation, a sandbag is like, it becomes this like symbol where communities are sort of, you know, carrying all these sandbags together to the dam or to the spot where they're gonna, you know, like prevent the flood. And I mean, motherhood has that relationship too, like just this collective, like we need to carry this weight together. And, you know, when we are, when our individual stories are kind of built up, like we can create a better barrier or a better, you know, support system. I don't know. It's just like something I, you know, am interjecting and taking away from the work for myself too, which is nice. But,
yes, absolutely. I think the community aspect is important because we speak about raising to raise a child you need a village. Well,
right.
to raise the child you need to also take care and protect the mother. So I think if we raise awareness of the needs and the desires of the mother, then the children will be raised and protected better if we care for the mother better.
Yeah, like it's not just about supporting the child, it's about supporting the mother who then can support the child, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I think just there's something there that could be totally unpacked for hours.
But yes.
Yes,
I love that. And I love that your work is addressing that and trying to poke holes in some of that. You know, some of those social constraints that we have. Claudia, can you tell me a little bit more just about who you are sort of outside of your art career? You know, you said in your bio that you're a nurse. Are you still like a full-time practicing nurse? Could you talk a little bit more just about, you know, your kids and your job and just sort of some of the practical things that make up who you are outside of art?
Yes, sure. I am still a nurse. I don't work full time. I work casually because it really fits my lifestyle. I am the primary care of my children, so I spend most of their time with me. So I've made the choice to be present for them and work whenever they're with their dads, at their dads, or when they're at school, which is, I don't usually work night shift. In fact, I haven't in a long time since I had children. I stopped working night shift. Okay. And it works out well because I get to choose when I can work. And it suits also the kids' school schedule.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And how old are your kids?
My daughter is 8 and my son is 5.
Okay. So they're getting up there, you know.
Slowly but surely, yes.
Yeah, I feel like once the youngest is older than 5, that seems like a big threshold, you know, like you've made it to like 5-year-olds and up. Like, I don't know, kids under the age of 5 are very different.
Yeah, this year my son is going to be starting foundation, like, which is, I guess, kindergarten in North America, I think. Mm-hmm. That's how we say it. Yeah, so it's a big deal, like going to school, the same school as his sisters, and it's the last child, like it's a big thing. So
yeah,
like bracing myself there and being there to help the transition.
I'm proud to share that this episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by Faherty. Faherty is a family-run clothing brand fueled by purpose and optimism. They make high-quality, sustainably-minded, feel-good fragrance that you'll be proud to wear. This clothing that's made not just to last the season, but a lifetime of wear. For the past few years, I've recently tried to curb my clothes shopping habits and change what I wear to reflect my values. I've pared down my clothes to things I feel good in and feel good about, which means buying less fast fashion and making fewer purchases overall, but buying more high-quality pieces when I do buy my clothes. Verity brand fits right into this model, and I'm kind of obsessed with their Arlie Day pants. They are super comfortable, but help me look slightly more put together than my usual yoga pants outfits. Anybody feel me? Verity brand believes in social justice and has partnered with and supported some organizations you may recognize, like United Natives, Artists for Peace and Justice, the Trevor Project, and the Audre Lorde Project. They're also holding their company to a high standard with sustainability, designing clothes to last that are made with low impact on the environment. You can shop Verity by heading to verityBrand.com/artistmother. Use code ARTISTMOTHER, all lowercase, all together, for 25% off your purchase. It really means a lot when you support the brands that help support our podcast. Check out Verity's website today and use code ARTISTMOTHER for a 25% off discount. That's pretty generous, guys. Thank you so much, Verity, for supporting this podcast and our community. And now, back to our episode. So what was it like, moving to Australia and sort of building your art career up in Melbourne? Do you feel like there's a really great sense of like art community in Melbourne? I'm not sure how long you've been there now, but just talk to me a little bit about sort of your art community that you have in your area.
Fostered and enabled me to maintain good connections with the community has been through university and going through my bachelor's and then following through post-grad studies. The sense of community was strong because, of course, you've got all the connections, you've got the facilities, and you definitely build that support group, but also mm-hmm. you learn the language to have the confidence to put yourself out there too, and through the networking, once you've got this a foundation for your practice, then it's easy to apply to meet and connect and collaborate with others to make work happen. And I think I have to give it to that, like to the community and the people who also reached out to invite me to be part of projects and finding like-minded people too. It can be extremely isolating as an artist mother if you don't have also this kind of the drive to maintain that connection.
Yes.
Because otherwise you can work alone, but then if your network or your immediate network is not affiliated necessarily to the arts, it's kind of hard to kind of keep that momentum going. So I have friends from all walks of life, from working as a nurse. So then you've got the peers who understand that part of that part, and then there's all the friends that are expats like me. And then there's the artist friends, and then there's the school, the parents of my kids' friends and all that. So yeah, it's great. Yeah. And they all intersect and they're all interconnected and it's great. And I think it's who you surround yourself with that also will keep you going. Mm. Definitely. And in terms of the community, I think there's a blend. I mean, of course there's, my work is from a particular category, of course, because it entails, motherhood, domesticity, and then there's a big art scene that involves diversity, anti-colonial work. So it's a strong social aspect to it, and yeah, like I think I'm quite lucky to to have a lot to be influenced by and also inspired by, and the connection close to Asia and Asian artists also, and from other continents is great too, because otherwise you it's quite insular if there's not that kind of communication and contact with the others. So yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a good network of like places to show your work in Melbourne and, you know, in some of the other areas in Australia?
Yes, definitely in Melbourne. Yeah. I think I've my whole career, probably in terms of art, artistic career, developed here in Melbourne, and has been maintained ever since I studied here and all that. And I've yet to, if it wasn't for the Toronto residency, like I would have been able to see what's and maintain connected with the North America as much if it wasn't for that. So at the moment I consider myself like still emerging, still finding my feet and all that, as somebody who finished a master's. But at the same time, I think it's about choosing how to engage and stay connected. So
yeah,
I keep it up. It's work like anything else. So it's
work. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you have to kind of have, you know, those feelers, keep putting them out there, just keep connected, you know, even sometimes just saying, hey, how's it going? Just dropping my name in the hat right now, you know, like I don't have anything necessarily to share, but just wanted to make sure you know that I'm still thinking about you. And I feel like that's like an important part of, you know, being an artist is that networking and communication really has to be maintained.
Yeah, it's like a relationship. Mm-hmm. Any relationship, you have to kind of, you know, feed it and maintain it. And it's an opportunity also to stay in the loop. And if your goal is to be showing, let's say, once a year or contribute something, I mean, just that, if that's enough for you to keep you going, it's great. You know, if you want to push, then of course, like it's about doing residencies. And at the moment, because of what's going on, and it, of course, things have been postponed for me, and now it's slowly coming back, like art shows, exhibitions, and all that have been put on hold. It's all happening to the point that I'm thinking, wow, like it's overlapping. It's like if it's super quiet, then you're like, oh, okay, I've got time for myself, but now I'm busy. It's like, it's really busy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, as we're working our way out of COVID, as we've figured out how to operate now, you know, maybe the floodgates feel like they're coming open again.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Tell me a little bit about, you know, just how COVID has affected your art career. I know you've made work about it, and I would love for you to talk about, you know, some of the projects that you've done, you know, just in the midst of the pandemic. Seems like you've, you know, still been making work, but just have shifted sort of your method a little bit.
Yes. And again, it's like working with constraints, which I find quite refreshing, because it forces you to kind of work with specific tools. And I had this grand plan to host a dinner at a gallery. And I was invited. I said, you know, one of my socially engaged kind of art projects was going to be presented in this gallery. And then the lockdown happened, so we turned it into a virtual dinner. And I was really excited about that, because I said, okay, great, we can still do it. I'm going to share the recipe. People are invited to cook the meal I was intended to cook for the crowd, and then we can all log on and speak and share and check in with everyone or who wanted to partake in the event. And that was a nice alternative to the original project. And I called that dinner event, I think it was called Sharing is Caring. And it was good. It was nice different experience to be seen in your personal space, and chatting and connecting with others to see how they were coping and how their art practice also was shifted because of that, and what they foresaw in terms of art scene in Melbourne. So that was a great, it had a great outcome. And the project, how are you living, or how are you experiencing your feminism in isolation? Well, there was a period where we're coming out of lockdown, but we still had some restrictions when it came to gatherings and all that. And I took the opportunity to go out there in this amazing park not far from where I live, and invite, or I guess post myself in the middle of the park and wait for people to come and talk to me and tell me what how they're going and how they felt like they were living their ideas of feminism in isolation. And I collected their stories. Children drew some pictures or just chatted with me, and it was really great to connect after having been isolated for a while and seeing faces that you would never see normally, mm-hmm. because being in the park you attract a different crowd. And it was interesting in terms of a kind of study to see that, for example, women were definitely more drawn to come and chat and mm-hmm. write their experiences, and children were drawn to the structure before the parents were, because it looked like a little cubby house in the middle of the park. Yeah. And
you invited people to talk about feminism, right? Like what feminism meant to them, or so there was this dialogue that you were sort of setting up.
Yes, for sure. And I was like, it's so hard when you're not interacting and you don't have your peers around, or you're not in your normal social setting where you can express your ideas, or in terms of how do you want to live your feminism, or how do you still keep it going, like assert yourself or stand up or raise awareness when you're within your own private space. Because if it wasn't for social media or connecting online, then it is still very different than being out there, seeing something or experiencing something, and then the factors are so different mm-hmm. when you're in isolation. And I was very curious to see how mothers, women, people in relationships who have children too, how did they navigate their values during the lockdown? Like, what did they feel like the load in terms of caring, the actual work of raising children, was it the same? How did it change? Was it ever discussed how it would be distributed and shared? And it was a one day kind of event, and the answers that I got were quite they all leaned towards, well, it wasn't really discussed. It just happened, and it was usually the mother that was caring and doing the work, and whereas before it was probably more it was divided differently. And it would be interesting to see now, in hindsight, how did what would you change, or what did this bring to you? So,
yeah,
something to be explored again, and probably in a different environment too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pandemic sort of really, I don't know, it's like it put this like pressure seal on everything, right? Where like, you know, things might be, you know, what they are in your normal life, and whether that's like you feel like you have a good balance or you don't or whatever, but then, you know, you're kind of like put in the pressure cooker with the pandemic, where it's like you're really like, oh, I really need more of this and I can't get it right now. I don't know. It just seems like, or the lens was like magnified. You know, things were brought to the surface that maybe because of the pandemic you wouldn't have addressed them as quickly, or maybe you've had to really suppress things because of the pandemic, you know, you can't address them at all. So it's just, yeah, been really interesting processing like how it's affected, you know, family units and just people as individuals, specifically caretakers. I think it's really fascinating to think about, and something I'm sure we're going to be processing for a long time.
Yeah. Oh gosh. And the repercussions of all that definitely will be felt, definitely through the works of artists and artist mothers. I have no doubt about that. Like, it's going to be good. It's going to be cathartic for sure, and eye opening too.
Yeah, I think so too. Tell me a little bit more about just this fascination with like self-isolation and escapism, like with that being sort of the focus of a lot of your previous projects and work. I just wanted to hear you flesh that out a little bit more, like what, you know, what specifically you're thinking about and how you're, I don't know, like kind of processing those things. And if you feel like the pandemic is pushing you to explore that work again, but maybe in new ways, or if you feel like you're kind of done with some of those themes for now.
Sure. I think the need to go back within myself to look in and to care also for my body, mind, spirit has been quite essential to survive also as a mother, but also to get better at mothering my children. And I was definitely challenged by the expectations of what I needed to be and as a mother, and what I felt like wanted to express. And the works on escapism were a way to remind myself that you can still escape or get that space, that personal space, that kind of time for yourself within the crowd, within the chaos. You don't need, you know, it's an interesting idea that you need to extract yourself from the space to absolutely experience some personal space, because you can still live it. And it's about putting aside the pressures, I guess, and also and holding on to the foundations of who you want to be and how you want to be. And it sounds very vague and broad, but at the same time, it's like, it's a bit, and it also probably comments on the need to feel confident about how you want to do things. And even just at the base level, like being an artist and a mother, like the whole thing of like, well, you cannot be both. You're meant to prioritize, you know, the children, like this, you know, being the artist can be is kind of a non-lucrative, like what are you doing? But at the same time, if this is, I feel that it is in me, it is something that needs to be unpacked, but also explored continuously, because throughout the different stages of life with the my children and revisiting my own childhood, but also reassessing where I want to stand in their lives. Like, what is my role? My role is always, in some ways, is the same, but is also shifting continuously to adapt to their needs. And then your and how you're going to address your needs also shifts with time. So I think it was a big revelation when I realized who am I as the mother, as the woman, and as the artist. And the works on self-isolation have been a good way to highlight the invisibility of motherhood and a good way also to speak about the need to reflect in introspection, but also how to rejig your life so you can have some space for yourself. And it's not a recipe, like it's not like fail-proof. Like, I mean, I think it changes, it varies. There are some times where you can get it. It doesn't work. And sometimes it's about finding a moment and enjoying the moment, whatever that is. And that, just that, enjoying the being in the moment of doing something very mundane can be enough to kind of recharge and check in with yourself.
Yeah, I love that too, and how it, you know, I mentioned to you over email that we've been kind of exploring this theme of visibility in sort of the first quarter of the year, like as a community. And, you know, just because so much of the artist mother identity is about, you know, labor that feels invisible, or parts of ourselves that, you know, feel like we aren't seeing, or that we're sacrificing in order to, you know, meet the needs of those around us. And so I feel like visibility is, you know, just a really key like thing in the life of an artist mother. And I feel like it directly relates to the work that you're making. You know, just this idea of how, you know, you kind of have to see yourself and identify your own needs so that you can, you know, move inward and really create this experience where you are getting what you need so that you can be a better mother, you know, but then also like making labor more visible so that, you know, understanding our stories is like so that we're better able to understand our stories and understand what it's like to have, you know, the experiences that we have. Do you feel like visibility is something that you think about a lot?
Yes. And it ties in, I think, with the invisibility of motherhood,
right?
Sometimes that is, I have definitely been exploring the concept of invisible labor and all that. And I think it goes also to say about everything else that also we miss out, that we can't, either we choose to not see, or we know that exists, but we need to acknowledge it and to express and experience kindness and compassion towards the things that may be a bit difficult and challenging and cause discomfort and anything that has, that exists in the periphery, like especially during pandemics, because then you realize, oh, well, how about, of course, there's the mothers, but then there's the ones that are experiencing financial challenges, the homeless and people of color and all that. Like, you know, it the circle gets bigger and bigger because mothers sit in one category, but then mothers also have been known to be reaching out and raising awareness for the well-being of the community. So I think we have a lot of power and traction when we look at what we can do and the potential we can end of influence of within our community through our work. And because after all, we are the ones in the front line.
Just to echo like what you're saying, I do feel like this walking through the world feeling like you are participating in invisible labor and feeling like you are unseen creates a special responsibility and positioning for you to provide visibility for other people who, you know, may not have it. And I just feel like that is so essential to like what we're trying to do in this community, what I feel like, you know, and you talked about confidence like in the beginning, and just growing into yourself and like seeing more of yourself so you can feel more confident allows you to look at others who are not receiving the same privilege and platform and, you know, really try to create spaces where people who are marginalized are visible because you understand that yourself. You know, I love that. And I feel like that's such a part of, you know, just what we're trying to do here. And it's something I think about a lot.
Yes. And I think you're totally right. I think it is a gift, I guess, as artists to be able to show and to the audience, whatever we want to share or, that is, there's always a connection, of course, with the artist, like within like this, the tie between the ideas we want to explore that are really meaningful to us, but that also will connect others because others will find themselves, within the work. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing way to convey messages, but also raise awareness, educate, others. And it never stops, really.
Claudia, I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about, you know, you're kind of talking about like your needs and, you know, sort of this journey of moving inward to like figure out, what you need to make yourself more whole and, you know, so that you can be a better mother and a better artist. Could you tell me a little bit about what those things might be practically? Like, what does that look like for you? What do you need, you know, one day a week where you're not responsible for anybody? Do you need to go on a walk every day? Like, do you need a lot of sleep? Like, just tell me a little bit about some of the practical things that you've learned about yourself through reflecting on this, and what you actually need.
I definitely need my sleep. It's been interesting that during the last year, 2020, like I was able with all that time to kind of reassess what I needed when everything was pared down to the bare minimum because there was no school. Well, I mean, some schooling, but not, you didn't need to take the children to extracurricular activities. You didn't have to, you weren't socializing. So then you stayed at home. So there was so much home time and I had the chance then to realize, okay, I definitely feel better if there's fitness in my life regularly. And because I missed out on that, I couldn't go to the gym. So I found out that this really helped my to feel better about myself. Like if I could at least exercise regularly, and I've made a point to do something a little, like if it's not an online video, it's like if the moment I don't, the kids are not with me, if they're at their dad's or they're, now that we're going to start school again, I'll just go to the gym. And even though it's not like something like, you know, it's not structured, it doesn't matter. Like I have learned to be, I guess a seasonal worker, if you want to call it that way, where I make room for that. I try to eat well, and I try to now, because I've got deadlines, I'm quite driven and making time to organize for my projects. So you carve those times. I guess I don't make all the time. I make when I have to, and I work well with deadlines, and I get I guess all the energy is put together to try to make the thing happening, and it seems to work. I mean, it can be very crazy, but it seems to work. And I guess I also have to leave room for just sometimes it doesn't work out, you know, it just doesn't work out. So you just leave room with that and accept and not, you know, beat yourself up for because of that, and be honest. You know, I my kids are at an age where they understand if I need space or I'm just tired, or I could just say it, and instead of manifesting through anger or just loss of patience, and I have learned also to be to verbalize better and to understand that that body language can also say something, but I don't mean, or, you know, like just to check in with myself before I react. So it helped. My life is not super, like, I try to be organized the best I can in terms of practicality, like in terms of management of the household, like meal planning, or just have a bit of an idea. So I plan around that. Especially now it's the summer holidays, so the kids are with me quite a lot, and it's, but also be mindful that things sometimes, you know, you just leave doors open for like the unpredictable. So it's good. It works out like that better for me at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to a lot of what you said. I just want to have you talk about one more thing, and then we'll wrap up the interview. But just going into this idea of, you know, organization, but like sometimes things don't work out and you kind of have to wait for inspiration. Just wanted you to talk a little bit about your actual studio and maybe how you organize ideas. I was wondering if you have a studio in your home, like, you know, just talking a little bit about your workflow and how all that's connected to your studio practice.
I would say the whole space can be my studio. Like, it really depends on what I'm working on at the moment, because I'm planning for a photo shoot. I believe I should be able to do it within my space here. So I'll set it up. For the shoot and do it. Like, when I was doing my sandbags, I was working in the living area, the main living area, kitchen. Everything can be displayed. Like, I have a desk right now. I'm talking to you on this desk where I do my writing, and it's just a makeshift desk that I created during the lockdown, because the studio turned. I have this room that is the sewing room. It's everything. It's the reading room. So every space turns into another space very easily, or the studio. Everything becomes like a workbench in a way.
Yeah.
And it changes. I just move around. If I'm going to build things, I'm not sure if I'm going to bring the materials here and build in my garage, but I there's a bit of space in my garage that I could use. Nothing is permanent. I think if I read, then the book, it becomes the research material. And for a long time, I had set up in my living area when my practice was shifted from making to writing about art. So I guess it's about embracing your versatility again. Yeah. It's just being adaptable. And I think that's one great skill I learned, that being an artist, like, you just work with what you got.
Yeah, I definitely Agree. And I love how you've kind of broken that down, like in, you know, just you have this experience of studio to you is not like a specific room, but it's more like this journey of whatever you need in the moment and, you know, kind of keeping it like fluid and transitory. It's just a interesting way to think about it. I like that. Okay, Claudia, let's close with five questions just for us to get to know you a little bit better. So tell me, who is your biggest art crush?
Louise Bourgeois.
Me too.
Yes.
The best.
Yeah. I've worked so like long exploring the same concepts and in so many different ways and I love it like how she working with the things around her and how they also the scale of the work and just never shied from expanding or then you would see the little like tapestries and that she would the embroideries you know work with these little squares like it's amazing. I like it.
Me too. Yes. Okay, what's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Well, to tell the truth, like it's the dream trip is not it's something like that involves exotic. It's actually just being able to go back home. I was meant to go home last year and it has been postponed to who knows when. So I think this is where I'd like to go next.
Yeah. And you mean back home to Montreal?
Yeah. My whole family's there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can see how that is your number one priority right now. Okay. What film or book has inspired you greatly?
Well, I discovered the author Lucia Berlin during last year, and I read several stories of hers, and they're really she's a great writer, and I felt totally inspired with her stories, and I could totally imagine wherever she had been and all that. It's a form of fiction, but autobiographical fiction. So it's really well done how she incorporated bits of her life and some were and weaved around stories. It's well done. It's a good skill.
Yeah, I'll have to look up that book or her writing, I should say.
Her works. She wrote in the 60s, 70s, 80s, traveled around America, had four sons, three marriages that didn't work out, and battled alcoholism at the same time too. So it's quite there's a lot there, a lot, and wit. She's so witty, and there's humor, but then there's sadness. There's a bit of everything. It's great.
Can't wait to look it up. Okay, what's your favorite meal?
I must say everything that has eggplant in it. I am a big fan of eggplant as a dish, as a vegetable. And so whenever I can, I try to pick a dish with that.
I love eggplant parm. It's like one of my favorite meals.
Yes. Oh, it's got everything.
And there's an Indian dish where they cook the eggplant down, like so it almost doesn't, you don't even know that it's eggplant, but it's like it just has this like silky texture and like holds the spices really well. You're the first person who said eggplant. I think it's called banging barta or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. If you like Indian food, look that up.
Yes. Okay. Will do.
Yeah. Okay, Claudia, and I always like to offer, just last but not least, a space for you to give a shout out to someone who you feel like has supported you in your work.
I would say my neighbor, Lenise. She has been there to mind my children when I had to write my thesis, and just been there whenever I needed something at the last minute, like, you know, the kind of neighbor that would have that extra egg or pint of milk or whatever, you know, but also that would totally understand, like, okay, I needed to, yesterday I had to rush to go get something at, get some material for my project. And I was like, oh, can you, is that okay? Just 15 minutes. I'll just leave the kids here. And she said, yeah, sure. No problem. And she's come to my shows. She's been there. And as a mother who also has two kids, same age and all that. So we have parallel lives with different, like stories and experiences, but it's great to have that support person too, who is not necessarily, who understands art, but is not necessarily practicing artist, but it's great to have somebody like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad everybody needs one of her.
Yeah. So I am so grateful to have met her, like, I would say 8 years ago, and it's great. And when I moved, I was so happy to realize she was my neighbor. Okay. I can't say how much it's fun to have that. Like, yes.
Okay. Where can people find out more about you and your work? What's your Instagram and website?
So my website is my name, ClaudiaFerris.com, and my Instagram is also Claudia Ferris, like C-L-A-U-D-I-A. I think it's underscore P-H-A-R-E-S, yeah. I think. Yeah.
We'll be sure to link to it, but I like, you know, when people are listening, sometimes it's nice for them to just have you say it too, so they can get it that way. All right, Claudia, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for submitting to the show. Your work is amazing, and it's just been so great to connect with you and talk about, you know, visibility and self-care and all these things that relate so strongly to the artist mother identity. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Kaylin. Like, I'm really moved and by this. Thanks for letting me share.
Yes.
And yes.
Yes.
And great podcast. So I'm quite honored to have been part of this. Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.